All right.
Welcome to the live stream. Testing, testing. I hope that you've all had a fantastic weekend and week so far. And I'm just calling this stream because I really want to get into the details of what has been happening, at least in the Trinidad side of things, with regard to this recent US escalation towards Venezuela. Right, Trinidad and Venezuela have been neighbors for a very long time, and this year marked the election of a new party, or rather the return of a party to power in Trinidad, as well as the inauguration of Donald Trump. And those two events have proved devastating for the United States, and they've also proved devastating for Trinidad and Tobago, and as well for Venezuela. So I just want to check and make sure that the live is functioning
Those two
smoothly.
events.
All right. For some reason, I'm not seeing chat coming up. Okay, there we go. All right. So I'm not going to get too much into the details of what has been happening with regard to Venezuela and the United States, at least their relationship and the history of their relationship. Because I was actually reading about, I'm doing an episode on the Grenada Revolution that took place in the late 70s and early 80s. And I saw that the United States and Venezuela both had gunboats stationed outside of Trinidad during our 1970 Black Power Revolution. So it's interesting to see that we went from, that state of affairs, that sort of collaboration against the so-called threat of communism to this clear loggerheads. But I'm not going to get into the history of how Venezuela and the United States came to that loggerheads. I'm here to talk about Trinidad to shed light on my home and the concerns that people on the ground have been having. So, I won't engage too much in chat as I just go through the information that I have so far. Eventually, I'll get into the questions and stuff, but for now, I just want to make sure I communicate all the information as effectively as possible. Let me just take a little sip of water. So the United States has carried out 14 strikes as of Monday, October 27th, mostly in the Caribbean, killing at least 57 people, with strong evidence indicating that many of them were fishermen. The Trump administration justifies this bloodshed with the empty slogan of narco-terrorism, which is, a clear and deliberate attempt to reframe imperial violence as something righteous, as something noble. Although there's nothing noble about killing drug traffickers, even if they are drug traffickers, of which we have, as of yet, no proof. On September 2nd, there's the first strike, 11 people killed. September 15th, there's a second strike, 3 people killed. Colombia's president confirms that the strike killed at least one fisherman. September 19th, Trump announced a third strike, 3 people killed. October 3rd, fourth strike, 4 people killed. October 14th, fifth strike, 6 people killed, including 2 men from the fishing village of Las Cuevas in Trinidad and Tobago, counted among the victims. Government Trinidad and Tobago don't really give a damn, as we'll get into shortly. October 16th, sixth strike, 2 people killed, 2 survivors. October 17th, 7th strike, 3 killed. October 21st and 22nd, you had strikes taking place in the Pacific Ocean, the 8th and 9th strike, which killed 2 people and 3 people respectively. October 24th, you have the 10th strike, which killed 6 people, and that was a strike right off the coast of Venezuela. And then on October 27th, just yesterday, Pete Hegseth announced 4 boats were struck, leading to 14 dead and 1 survivor in the Pacific Ocean. The US is claiming that Maduro is a drug lord, that he is part of some kind of narco organization, narco terrorist organization, and that their strikes are justifiable for that. There's no death penalty for drug smuggling or anything of that nature, and yet, although it's a flagrant violation of international law, as we have seen over the past few years, none of that really matters. So that's the situation in terms of the timeline, right? I am from Trinidad and Tobago, and Trinidad and Tobago, Trinidad specifically, that is, and Trinidad and Tobago, for those who don't know, is an independent, we're supposed to be independent, twin island republic in the Caribbean. Geographically, we're actually an extension of a mountain range that is right in Venezuela, actually. There's a small gulf that separates Trinidad from Venezuela. It's about 11 kilometers apart at its shortest distance. And the northern mountain range of Trinidad is literally part of a mountain range in Venezuela. So Trinidad is actually continental land that has just been separated by a bit of water. And, you know, to not get too deep into the history, we were under the Spanish for some time. And while we were under the Spanish, we were settled by French settlers. After the US got its independence in 1776, just about two decades later, Trinidad became a colony of Britain in 1797. And after the War of 1812, a lot of African Americans don't know this, but a lot of African Americans were actually brought to Trinidad, resettled in Trinidad, after that war. Those who sided with the British, that is. So that's just like a little fun trivia fact. I might actually be descended from some of them. Don't know the details of that history, of that family history. So American military bases were established in Trinidad during World War II. Most notably the Waller Field, which was commissioned in 1941, which was an Air Force base. And then we also had Chagramas, which was a naval base, became fully operational in 1943. And this is while we're still under the British, the US and the British basically came to an agreement where the US would provide the British with destroyers in exchange for bases being set up in the colonies. So the base was scaled back in 1956, and the area of Chagramas was returned to Trinidad and Tobago and Trinidad and Tobago's control in 1963, which is a year after we got our independence in 1962. Chagramas was also the location meant to be the capital of the short-lived West Indies Federation, and Chagramas was the place where the Treaty of Chagramas was signed, establishing CARICOM, the Caribbean Community and Common Market, in 1973. CARICOM becomes relevant later on. So, like I said, Trinidad and Tobago gained our independence in 1962, we became a republic in 1976, and we were under the rule of a certain Dr. Eric Williams of the People's National Movement until 1981. This is the Dr. Eric Williams that some of you would know wrote Capitalism and Slavery, which is a fantastic work on the history of slavery and its abolition and capitalism. But Dr. Eric Williams, despite styling himself as an anti-colonial figure, also suppressed the Black Power movement in Trinidad and Tobago and banned the Trinidadian-born American immigrant Kwame Ture, aka Stokely Carmichael, a world-renowned socialist and Pan-Africanist. Now, unlike many other Caribbean nations, Trinidad is not particularly focused on tourism. We are an oil and gas nation, as well as a manufacturing and service economy. We rode the wave of the 70s oil boom and the 2000s oil boom, which correlated, you know, with certain happenings in the Middle East. America's Monroe Doctrine reared its ugly head in the region with the 1983 invasion of Grenada after Maurice Bishop's coup. And this was an invasion that I'm going to do an episode if it could happen here about, but that invasion ended up splitting CARICOM. Because the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, Dominica, Barbados, and Jamaica all appealed to the United States for assistance after, you know, Bishop came into power. Whereas, you know, Canada and Trinidad and Tobago and the United Kingdom were against the invasion. So it's that invasion kind of demonstrated to the Anglo-Caribbean that the US is not above meddling violently in our affairs. The Latin Caribbean and Latin America in general kind of knew that already, over those few decades with all the interventions that the United States engaged in that time. But, you know, that was really an instance where it hit close to home for the English-speaking Caribbean. Now, let me just check the chat. Okay. Let me continue. I just want to make sure I have no technical difficulties. So, Trinidad was a non-aligned nation during the Cold War, right? Now, with the US being our northern neighbor and closer to us, we engaged more with America, particularly after the invasion of Grenada. The Caribbean islands really didn't want to even engage with the Eastern Bloc much, but we were still technically non-aligned, right? And so we also managed to maintain relationships with other territories. America, for its part, it has a really strong connection with Trinidad, because, or at least Trinidad has a strong connection with America. Trinidadians have a strong connection with America because, well, America is a trade partner. Much of the Trinidadian diaspora is based in America. A lot of Trinidadians travel to Venezuela to shop or to visit family. A lot of American companies are in Trinidad in the form of the oil and gas companies. And America also is, you know, a gross exporter of culture, of pop culture, of products for consumption, of mass media. So I'm not going to get into the breakdown, like I said, but as of recently, as in the past few decades, America does not particularly like Venezuela. But the thing is, despite America and Venezuela's poor relations, Trinidad managed to maintain a very positive diplomatic relationship with both America and Venezuela under the rule of the People's National Movement, the PNM, the party of Dr. Eric Williams that I mentioned previously, and particularly in the past decade under Prime Minister Dr. Keith Rowley. Also, as I'm talking about the connections between the countries, I should mention that Venezuelans and Trinidadians have also had a long-standing history, right? Venezuelans have been present in Trinidad both prior to the recent events and also recently. A lot of Venezuelans came to Trinidad to engage in the cocoa plantation industry, in cocoa plantations, and a lot of Trinidadians actually went to Venezuela either for tourism or to engage in the mining sector in Venezuela, as well as the oil and gas sector. Venezuela has really been seen as the source. For some Trinidadians, Venezuela has been seen as the source of some of our woes as well. You know, it's long seen and understood that because of Trinidad's location, it's a very critical transshipment point between Latin America and the Caribbean for guns and drugs and that sort of thing. So a lot of that stuff gets funneled through Trinidad coming out to Venezuela, right? And with the economic crisis worsening in Venezuela, thanks to, you know, the US sanctions and thanks to the mismanagement on the part of the Venezuelan government itself, there's been, you know, the very famous migrant crisis of Venezuelans leaving Venezuela to go basically anywhere else. You know, so a lot of Venezuelans have made it to the ABC Islands, that's Aruba, Bonaire, and Curacao. A lot of Venezuelans have made it to Brazil, to Colombia, to Guyana, to Suriname. And a lot of Venezuelans have made it to Trinidad. And let me actually, I think I should pull up a map so that you'll have something more visually interesting to look at as I break this down. So just give me 1 second. I'm starting to realize my throat might be a little bit sore, you know. Okay. So, yeah, let me pull this up now. Where is, okay. There we are. So, As you can see, there's a lot of, this is Venezuela, for those who didn't know. This is the United States, for those who didn't know. And down here is Trinidad. So like I was talking about, that's the mountain range in Venezuela that extends right into Trinidad. This northern range here, as we call it. This is the Gulf that separates Trinidad from Venezuela. You see how close we are at various points. So with the economic crisis in Venezuela, you have a lot of Venezuelans going over to Guyana. You have a lot of Venezuelans going over to Trinidad Tobago, to, you know, Aruba, to Curacao, to Colombia, etc. And I believe as of, I have to get the exact numbers. I think it's a couple tens of thousands of Venezuelans in Trinidad at this point. And that was a wave that took place in the mid to late 2010s. And the economic situation has worsened for pretty much everyone around the world since the 2020s, especially. And it seems that Maduro wanted to make some kind of attempt to perhaps whip up some nationalistic fervor. But he announced that he was, you know, pressing Venezuela's claim to Guyana's territory. This is in light of Guyana finding some new offshore reserves, and it appeared that those reserves made that long claimed territory a bit more enticing for Venezuela. Now, nothing much had come of it yet. It was something that was meant to be handled, you know, through diplomacy. Sorry about that. Yeah, something that was meant to be sort of handled through diplomacy. And as it was being handled previously, but it was used also as an opportunity to seemingly create a rift in the region that the US is able to exploit. So obviously a lot of Guyanese were very concerned about Venezuela's actions. Venezuela is a very militarily powerful country, right? It's like a regional power, or at least it has the potential to be a regional power, if not for its current economic, you know, worries. It's a population of, I think, 33 million people, something around that ballpark. And it's a very big country, right, with a large military force. And so a lot of Guyanese were concerned about, you know, losing their territory to Venezuela. And, you know, Guyana is a culturally Caribbean country. It is part of South America, but it's an English-speaking country. It is culturally connected to the rest of the Caribbean. And so because of that sort of connection within the region, a lot of the rest of the region was concerned about Venezuela making that move against Guyana. Now, when this was taking place, the PNM was still in power in Trinidad. And so diplomacy was the response that the PNM took to this incident, because while this is going on, the PNM is also trying to organize something called the Dragon Gas Deal. The Dragon Gas Deal, the Dragon Gas Field is an area in, I believe, somewhere around northern, this sort of northern water area here, right? Let me see if I could actually just look it up. Gas Field. Yeah, so it's this area. Here we see the Dragon Field, the Hibiscus Field. And so we had an agreement that we were coming to between Venezuela and Trinidad to extract and process the reserves in Venezuela's territorial waters and to split the profits basically between Trinidad and Venezuela and the companies involved. Now, we had to get America's permission to do this, because America thinks it owns the whole world and can dictate who does what business with who. But Biden actually gave, you know, Trinidad permission to engage in this deal, right? At least the Biden administration did. However, when Trump came into power, he rescinded all of that. And just after Trump came into power, we had elections of our own in April. And Kamala Prasad Bisesa and the United National Congress took power. UNC, United National Congress, is one of the two major political parties in Trinidad, led by this lady right here, Kamala Prasad Bisesa, who's on the thumbnail of this live stream. So she was opposed to the drug and gas deal for a very long time, right? She was speaking out against it and all these different things. But let me get into who she is first, right? So she's the leader of the UNC, like I mentioned. And in Trinidad, the UNC is typically considered an East Indian political party. More specifically, an East Indian Hindu political party, because, you know, historically, the Muslim and Christian East Indians in Trinidad and Tobago were more politically split. For those who weren't aware, Trinidad is a multi-ethnic society, so we have a very large African population, a very large East Indian population, and also populations of mixed race and Chinese and Syrian and Lebanese and all sorts of other stuff in the pot as well, Amerindian and so on and so forth, or El Kalalu society. But, you know, with a mixed society, you also have the traumas being carried from a colonial history, the very explicit attempts by the British to foment division and discord between racial groups to favor some over others and this, that, and the other. And so those tensions persist to this day. Now, we didn't get to the level of Guyana where Guyana actually had a race war of sorts. But there have been tensions that have been going on for a long time, and it rears its ugly head, particularly during election seasons. Now, the UNC has mostly been the opposition party in Trinidad and Tobago. They had their times in power. I won't get too much into that whole timeline. But when they are in the opposition, they have tended to seemingly oppose for the sake of opposing. Their role as an opposition party is not necessarily fulfilled well by them, at least from my point of view. Kamla in particular, pretty well known for being drunk, for being corrupt, for being pretty racist, and also she's kind of a copycat, right? So when she first came into power, became the first female prime minister of Trinidad and Tobago, she came into power in 2010. That was just after Obama had come into power in the United States. And so during her campaign, she kind of stole Obama's flow, you know, his sort of message of hope and that sort of thing. And she also kind of sold out Trinidad, you know, because she brought in Cambridge Analytica to facilitate her winning the election. Right, so you could kind of get into this. Cambridge Analytica kind of used Trinidad as a testing ground for some of their strategies. Right, and so after she came into power, after she was exposed for collaborating with Cambridge Analytica to use social media to manipulate the electorate, she eventually was voted out in 2015. And, you know, since then, she's been the opposition. What else am I missing about her? Also, she's been pretty consistently anti-CARICOM. Her opinions on CARICOM, the Caribbean community, have been very charged, I would say, with a very anti-solidarity, anti-regional integration kind of energy. And I have some theories related to that, but I don't want to speculate at this point in time on the public stage. And so she was voted out after one term. And like I said, she's a copycat. So 10 years later, we have another election. That's in 2025. And she caught the Trump virus. You know, she became basically a mini Trump in Trinidad. During COVID, she was making statements like sunlight will kill COVID. And basically being oppositional as an opposition leader in every chance that she got. Her party has also devolved further into a personality cult around her as members of the UNC who are not in the Kamla party, or in the Kamla camp, kind of get kicked out after some time, right? So she gets back into power. Actually, no, I mean, I could go that far ahead. While she was leader of the opposition, she openly declared her support for Juan Guaido, which is the claimed president of Venezuela after Venezuela had its elections in, I can't remember what year it was, but that detail doesn't matter. So she even went as far out as to call for the United States to sanction Trinidad and Tobago after the vice president of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez, made a visit to the country to meet with the then prime minister, Dr. Keith Rowley, during COVID, right? So again, big sellout. What do you mean you calling for sanctions? United States sanctions on your own country, just to spite the opposing party. Right? So during that time, she was also very much against any collaboration with Venezuela. She don't want to hear anything about this Dragon Gas deal, despite the fact that it would, you know, economically benefit Trinidad and Tobago, because our own reserves are kind of on a decline, right? So 2025 rolls around. April 2025, they call the election. She comes back into power in a landslide. Despite the corruption of her previous term, despite the fact that her opposition shenanigans have been ridiculous, and it's not really because she got more votes than usual. The UNC did get slightly more votes than they did the last time that they lost, but it's really because in this election cycle, third parties performed uniquely well, and also from what I saw, I think around 200,000 voters who voted for PNM in the last election did not vote at all or voted for third party. So PNM was missing about 200,000 votes, and that's kind of what got UNC into its position of power. Now, as for why people didn't vote for PNM, it's pretty obvious. The economic situation in the country is terrible. The crime situation is terrible. They were in power for the last 10 years, and people are reasonably frustrated with the post-COVID economy, with the rampant crime, and with the arrogance that a lot of PNM leaders projected. You know, PNM has a lot of issues that I'm not really interested in getting into today. So she comes into power, and in many ways she's mirroring this Trumpian rhetoric and approach to governance. She's reshuffling the ministries. You know, all of a sudden we have a Ministry of Homeland Security. All of a sudden, right? Like America sneeze, Trinidad catch a cold. You just keep that phrase in mind, and that will describe much of the situation in the country, unfortunately. America sneeze, Trinidad catch a cold. Right, so we have a Ministry of Homeland Security. All of a sudden, she comes into the power and she cancels our Independence Day parade. She's firing tens of thousands of workers all over the place. They recently released a new budget that, you know, has a lot of problems, including a very, very optimistic estimate for the price of oil, and also a lot of smoke and mirror measures like dropping the price of gas for consumers while raising the costs of living elsewhere. So spin around now, and she goes from being against the Dragon Gas deal to being with and for the Dragon Gas deal. So PNM was in power, PNM was pushing for the Dragon Gas deal, she's against Dragon Gas deal. As soon as she comes into power, all of a sudden, she's for the Dragon Gas deal. Some kind of closed door arrangement was made with the United States. The details, we don't know. We don't know what she agreed to. We don't know what she's opened up the country to. What we do know is that she has offered our territory as essentially an unsinkable base of operations for America's military activity in the region. And it's possible that some promises were made with regard to our ongoing foreign exchange crisis. But let me not speculate too much, because again, we don't really have the details on what's going on. You know, she's not really addressing the nation at all. She's an old lady, for one, and she seems to be mostly communicating via WhatsApp and the occasional political party rally, right? And so it's very weird to suddenly claim, and she's claimed recently that the Dragon Gas deal is back on. Which is a weird thing to say, considering how wild she's been talking toward Venezuela. A lot of fighting words has been used by her and also members of her administration, including, most famously and critically, her often quoted line in international news that in response to the United States' first illegal and immoral strike on a Venezuela-based vessel, that she has no sympathy for traffickers and the US military should kill them all violently. Is it actually a drug boat? We don't know. If it was a drug boat, does that make it okay? No. The footage, very suspicious. You know, no proof has really been provided to the people. And in any case, it's a flagrant violation of international law. But as we established on many an occasion, the United States does not care about international law. So she also would have stated to the media that she, along with most of the country, is happy that the United States naval deployment is having success in their mission. That's a lie. Okay? The most of the country is not happy with her opening up the country to the United States in the ways that she has. Most of the country is not okay with what has been happening for the past few weeks and the past month. So while she is saying, God bless and protect the members of the US military and da 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 da, that's not really the Trinidad's pop. That's not really the grassroots population position that I've been seeing. And thankfully, Maduro seems to recognize that the Trinidadian population and the Trinidadian government are not exactly aligned, but that doesn't mean that we won't face any consequences at all, right? Because if we are a base of operations for United States activity, technically that makes us free real estate in the sense of a target, an open target, And so right now, our fishermen are scared to leave the coast. At least two of them have already been killed. The wider region is not particularly happy with the United States activity or Trinidad's alignment with that activity as of late. Because, again, you don't get to just bomb boats and then claim afterwards that they were bad people and that makes it okay. That's not how it works. So now we can finally get into what CARICOM is saying about all of this, right? CARICOM, Caribbean community, also has a lot of problems. Myself and much of my generation, we tend to see it as a bit of a do-nothing organization. And when I really got into the history of CARICOM, I came to understand why. It came out of the failure of the West Indies Federation to succeed. And so there were resentments coming out of the failure of the West Indies Federation that took a while to resolve as well. And then, as I mentioned, CARICOM was split over the United States invasion of Grenada. And so that split also took a few decades to recover from. And so, despite the fact that there is some collaboration between the islands, CARICOM has not done as much as it could in terms of integrating the region effectively and pushing forward its interests globally. We don't even have affordable trips between the islands yet. And many of our islands are extremely close together, right? And so, many years ago, we had the leaders of CARICOM affirming the Caribbean as a zone of peace. Now, I understand the critiques of this concept of the Caribbean as a zone of peace because, a lot of people have been suffering in the region from drug trafficking, from gun smuggling, from human trafficking, from the consequences of neo-colonial society, from the violence that violence has begot, We are not a peaceful paradise, but for the most part, we have managed to remain out of the geopolitical clashes that have defined much of the 21st century and the late 20th century as well. And so when CARICOM comes out now and they're saying, we want the region to remain a zone of peace, they're talking very specifically about this desire to keep this kind of US military action outside of the territory because it makes the whole region unsafe, makes us all susceptible to violence, to new forms of violence, in addition to the forms of violence we already face on a day-to-day basis, the systemic violence, the interpersonal violence, the various forms of violence that we face. And so while Trinidad and Tobago was making a bid to be elected to the United Nations Security Council, we are Trinidad's in a position, if it gets into that role, where it can represent the interests of the rest of the region. But Kamala is not a fan of CARICOM. All of her actions and statements have made that extremely clear. Right? And so CARICOM put out a statement talking about, this decision that Trinidad and Tobago has made, thanks to Colonel Prasad Bisesa, to isolate itself from the rest of the region, to take on this belligerent attitude towards Venezuela, who has also been collaborating with other Caribbean islands as well. It's a shaky situation, right? I'll put it that way. Former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dr. Amory Brown, he was a member of the People's National Movement, PNM. He made a statement saying that, we worked extremely closely with the US, our largest trading partner, and at the same time, did not sacrifice our exemplary relations with China, the European Union, India, the nations of Africa, Venezuela, Colombia, the UK, Canada, etc. Venezuela is actually an observer state in CARICOM. And for a long time, CARICOM and Trinidad Tobago as part of CARICOM have maintained this diplomatically careful and considered position. We've managed to maintain relationships with parties who may be clashing with each other, but we kind of cool with all of them. We cool with China, we cool with the United States, we cool with the UK, we cool with Canada. We're working with the region and that kind of thing. Because that's kind of the position you have to be in as a small island state. But Kamala has nixed all of that, right? She's endorsed the US military's deployment in the Southern Caribbean Sea, right outside of Venezuela's territorial waters. So far, there have been a lot of reports of US warships, submarines, naval task forces, aircraft, missile defense systems. Under the PNM, the US did actually sign an agreement with Trinidad and Tobago called a Status of Forces Agreement, right, to have joint military exercises. And they seem to be using that agreement as a basis to engage in other operations, right? Now, this agreement does not actually give explicit permission for the United States to deploy its military in Trinidad and Tobago or in any other country that engages in a SOFA with, right? But it still needs all countries' approval, which is why it's very dangerous that, Kamala has given that approval to the US to use our country's territory in the event that Venezuela engages in any sort of belligerent operations. US has also been putting a lot of pressure on other countries in CARICOM to assist them in their military endeavors. In Grenada, the US approached Grenada, which is very ironic. They approached Grenada to put a what's the word for it? The like a military satellite, a military radio, something like that, in Maurice Bishop International Airport, which is very ironic. And they also approached Antigua for the same reason or for similar reasons, and Antigua said no. But as of my recent research, Grenada still hasn't given a response a month later. And obviously, Grenada's population is not in favor of that at all. But at least that government hasn't made a decision yet. Meanwhile, Kamala has basically signed us up to be USA Junior in the region. It's tarnished our reputation in the global stage. It's basically taken us from being this non-aligned state to being a satellite state. And so we now we have warships. We have a US warship currently docked in Port of Spain. We have joint military training underway as of this weekend. And in response to the criticism that Kamala and the UNC has been receiving from the opposition and from the population about the US warship's visit, she went to the media to claim, or she rather she made the claim in a press release that hit the news on Saturday that the PNM was funded by a drug mafia. Right? So she is again taking a page out of the Trump playbook. They say that your political enemies, either overseas or at home, are engaged in criminal behavior. She's opened up the opposition party, the PNM, now as a target of accusations of narco-terrorism as well. What else have I to cover? What else am I supposed to cover? So, I think I have to wrap up here. Well, I have some more things to say. Right. So, the United States is in some ways, it seems to be a dying empire. It has this newly minted Department of War, which seems very much intent on intervention of some kind. And after one failed attempt in 2020, Operation Gideon, CIA operations have been confirmed to be taking place. The details are not so clear, but the CIA is allegedly operating in Trinidad and in Venezuela to fulfill whatever mandate they have received. As for Venezuela now, and Venezuela's response to some of the things that have been going on, yeah, so as for what Venezuela is responding with, on Monday, as yesterday, Venezuela's vice president and oil minister, Delcy Rodriguez, announced that Venezuela would suspend and withdraw from all gas agreements with Trinidad and Tobago. Right? And that has a potential impact of lost revenue for Trinidad in the zone of 1 to 2 billion USD annually, which is about 7 to 8 billion TTD annually. Just lost because, we have made our alignment with the US clear and Venezuela has responded accordingly. Also, if I should be clear as well, I'm not particularly fond of, I mean, I don't think I need to make this clear. I think my audience knows me well enough to know that I'm not siding with any political leaders or powers that be. I'm not a fan of Maduro. I'm not a fan of what's been going on in Venezuela. I've met a lot of refugees from Venezuela. And, what I want and what the people of Venezuela want, what the people of Trinidad and Tobago want, is peace, is liberation from the oppression of our rulers and all the ways they oppress us, whether they take the side of one global power or another. We just want what everybody wants, which is, a good life, decent standard of living, and the end to violence and hostilities that threaten our livelihoods. Unfortunately, we have these governments in these positions where they threaten that. Now, they are very clear aggressors in this. The United States is a very clear aggressor in this situation. That doesn't make the Venezuelan government actions in Venezuela okay, but we know that the United States is not a superhero. It's not coming to save anybody. The United States intervenes in international affairs to further the interests of the United States and the United States alone. And unfortunately, with these sorts of crises as they unfold, because of a lack of, political consciousness and cultural consciousness and awareness of where the sources of our suffering truly lie, a lot of scapegoats end up being identified, right? So even before any of this was popping off, you had people who are living in poverty in Trinidad complaining that, poor people from Venezuela were coming to Trinidad to also try and make ends meet. The response to other poor people shouldn't be, they shouldn't be here, they should suffer or go away or whatever. It should be, what is the barrier? What is the block? What is the border that's keeping us all collectively as a class from, living a quality of life, considering the vast inequality that exists in Trinidad and Tobago in particular. This is a, a classic case for international intercultural solidarity, something that is sorely needed in these times, and something that is sadly under further threat as there have also been, there has recently been another situation regarding Venezuelan immigrants in Trinidad, which is that the Minister of Homeland Security in Trinidad recently instructed the special forces that all illegal immigrants detained are to be held at the immigration detention center until repatriation. They are not to be placed on order supervision, as consideration is currently being given to the implementation of a mass deportation exercise for illegal immigrants. America sneeze, Trinidad catch a cold. America sneeze, Trinidad catch a cold. America sneeze, Trinidad catch a cold. Right? The same mass deportation conversation and agenda being pushed in the United States is coming into Trinidad by way of the UNC government. They are agitating for a potential mass deportation exercise. And that is about as much as I think I prepared to share. This is a developing situation. And I don't know when I will give an update on what has been taking place, but this is as up to date as of today, right? I did want to share, I did have a video that I wanted to share. It was like a, oh yes, I forgot to mention. So there was actually a terrorist attack in Guyana yesterday, right? A bombing of, I think a gas tank explosion or something of that nature, that was allegedly set off by a Venezuelan national. Now, just the day prior, on Sunday, the Venezuelan government made a statement saying that these military exercises that the Trinidad and Tobago is carrying out under US control has opened up an opportunity for the preparation of a false flag attack being prepared from waters, from being prepared from Trinidad to generate a full military confrontation against Venezuela. Now, this is what Venezuelan government is alleging. You really need to take everything that every government says with a grain of salt, but there is a history of false flag operations that the United States has engaged in. And the timing of it is just interesting. I'm not very conspiracy brained, so I think it could be a coincidence. But it's very interesting that all of a sudden, after all these years of, you know, Venezuelans being in all these countries as refugees, as economic migrants, that the timing just kind of lined up that one of them has engaged in this attack, engaged in this bombing that killed a child, unfortunately. And yeah, it's strange, right? Strange timing. But I don't want to get into that sort of conspiracy brain speculation. I try to stick with the facts that are available to me. So for the Trinidadians in the audience, I just want to say, you know, prepare yourself, you know, get your go bag ready, get your supplies stocked up if anything takes place. You know, if you happen to be in Port of Spain in the event of anything, you know, have a plan, right? We know how bad the traffic situation gets. Have a plan, right? Have somebody you could go by, have a place that you can shelter, because I actually got video footage of the warship today, just, you know, sitting there right by our port, and it really is something to behold. It is a worrying state of affairs. I am worried. A lot of experts are saying that they don't expect an actual US invasion or US engagement with Venezuela or any kind of war. I don't know. I think that's, considering the position of the warships, the flagrant sort of provocations that seem to be taking place, I don't know. And you know what it feels like? It feels like you're facing this Lovecraftian entity. You know, the United States military is the most powerful military in the world. And as a small country, a small island, you know, it really feels like we are facing down Cthulhu. You know, that Cthulhu has based its operations here in Trinidad. It's like, what are you even supposed to do in response? But for one, remember that at the end of the day, they are humans. You know, they are prone to error and incompetence, just like everyone else. They are not invincible. They are not inevitable. They are not unstoppable. But I think for now, my priority and priority for most people in my immediate circle is to really just prepare to set things up in place to really just be ready for whatever takes place, whether it's a protracted war, whether it's a coup of some kind, whether it's an escalation of some other variety that is not technically a war, da 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 da. Whatever it is, I just want to tell Trinians, be prepared. Everybody else, just, you know, try and keep up to date with what's happening. You know, get the knowledge, and do what you can to disrupt the machine. Let me see if I could get into questions and a little bit of discussion with the chat before I hop off of here, because I'm starting to lose my voice a bit. Okay, so I saw Kevlar Ninja ask if there's any threat of any kind of anti-left slash general dissent crackdown to Trinidad like Trump has been doing. Oh, how could I forget to mention this? So since the UNC has been in power pretty much since day one, I can't remember the exact date they called it, but Trinidad and Tobago is technically under a state of emergency. Right? We are under a state of emergency with an indefinite conclusion. So just, you know, that already provides opportunity for the government to do basically whatever it wants. The left is kind of, I wouldn't say there's really like a definitive left in Trinidad, like as a social force. There are people who lean left, there are left-wing figures, you know, there is like the Movement for Social Justice led by David Abdullah. And then you also have like individual groups and circles and stuff where people are engaged in radical politics, but it's not something that's necessarily on the forefront quite yet. So it's very possible that there could be targeting, there could be crackdowns, but right now we already have the state of emergency in place. Anything is possible. Right, the terrorist attack is, if you just look up, let me just look that up so I could show people what I was talking about. So that's what it's being called, a terrorist attack. Right, let me screen share this real quick. Oops, wrong thing. Yeah. Jeez, AP News, calm down, down. Okay, right. Guyana says targeted attack on gas station killed 8-year-old girl and injured four others. Right. Da 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 da. Boom, 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 boom. So yeah, you can always just look up this article and see what I'm talking about, but that's the gist of it. Let me see what else people are talking about in the chat. I go to school in the other major city here, and I'm just becoming more and more terrified every day. I'm assuming you mean San Fernando. Yeah, it is a scary situation, and it sucks as well because we live on an island. You know, so it's like, where are we supposed to go? We live on an island, and the U.S. is already bombing boats around the island, or near to the island, or in the Caribbean Sea in general. So, you know, next time you try to flee, and they claim, "Oh, yep, that's a drug boat," and that's it. It's very risky, you know. Personally, I'd probably flee to Toko or something if anything happened. This is Toko, by the way. Let me show the chat. Togo's over here. It's not a very populated area compared to the more industrialized core of the country along the east-west corridor and the north-south corridor. Experts have been having a shitty batting average regarding politics as of late. Yeah, definitely. Andrew, did you talk about the Russian aircraft that landed in Venezuela yesterday? No, I did not know about that. See, you see how much the situation is just escalating? I didn't even hear about that. I'm getting news from various sources at different times all throughout the day. Just new updates. And obviously, I'm going to miss certain things. Heavy Russian call. Plane lands in Caracas mid. Who is Defense News? I don't know who Defense News is. Maduro boasts of thousands of anti-aircraft missiles. Can I need a more familiar source. I don't really know Defense News. I haven't heard of them before. Well, they have reported this. They have reported this as well. Caliber EZ is another source. So it's possible. You know, could always go and check the flight logs, but I'll just take your word for it. I don't really doubt that. Considering Russia does align itself with Venezuela, I wouldn't be surprised if they send supplies to Venezuela. Okay, let's see what else people are saying. Get your passports ready too, I guess. Yeah, if you can fly out of the country, if, you know, flights are not grounded in the event of any further escalation. And where would you even go? You know, Trinidad's passport is not the most powerful. It's pretty good, you know, all things considered, how other countries' passports are. But, you know, just this year, the UK closed our visa-free access. You know, our former colonial power basically said we have to, like, pay, like, some over £1,000 or something just to apply for a visa to get into the country. This is, you know, after years of having visa-free access to the UK. So I've never been to the UK. I wanted to, mostly to see what was in the British Museum. But that's not really looking possible. I'm not going to give them £1,000 just for the chance to go into their overcast country. No offense to the, you know, the Brits in the audience. But, you know, I think I will save my travel ambitions for elsewhere. The PNM weakened the left in the 70s and 80s, and we are facing the issues that come with it. Yeah. I mean, the PNM weakened the left in the 70s and 80s with their crackdown on the Black Power movement. And also, the left in the region in general was basically killed after the US invasion of Grenada. Because everybody just basically put their head down after that. You know, the various parties and movements, radical forces, they all just kind of fizzled out after that invasion. I resent Eric Williams for his harm on the Trinidadian left and resent him for choosing Chambers over Muhammad as his successor. Yeah, I resent Williams for a lot of things. He's a complex figure. For sure. And, yeah, as Long Defiant is saying, there's definitely an opportunity to build world power. You know, I don't want Chinese to just kind of go into their bubbles and their holes and stuff. You know, share the information within your community for those, you know, your retired neighbors and friends and relatives and people in your network. You know, get the word out that they can prepare. You know, the Trinidadian government isn't really telling us much of anything. They are, you know, again, America sneezed, Trinidad catch a cold. They are following the Trump playbook of flooding the zone. So they're just doing so much nonsense on a daily and a weekly basis that it's hard to keep up. Right. You can check this article. There's basically just doing a whole bunch of madness all at once, and so it makes it very hard to keep up with what's going on. So keep up with what you can, but also really, I think, turn to, your social ties, your connections, the community. At a time like this, it's very necessary that we do not go out and panic buy. Take your time, see how you can help others around you, see if you can talk within the neighborhood to see what the plan is. Because, if things get hot, right? If things get hot, there are a lot of consequences to that, at least within countries. If you look at the consequences of countries that are engaged in active war, how things are going on internally, how potential actions that are considered threatening to the war effort are treated. You want to have contingency plans in place. You want to have offline communication channels set up. You want to have supplies ready to distribute. UNC is Williams Macon. Just to be racist, and we can have a proper Labour Party to left the PNL. I don't know. I don't know if the UNC is fully Williams Macon. I think it also. I mean, to be fair, pretty much everything in Trinidad is to some extent Williams Macon. So we could, have that argument. But I think the UNC is also very much connected to a longer standing tradition, of parties like the DLP, that had racial agitations of their own, let's just say. And I think that's as much as I am planning to say. Yeah, Trinidad has a decent passport. Let me just share what the passport is. Trinidad. Passport, visa requirements. Yeah. So sadly, collaboration yet to take place with much of Africa. We have, we have access to the EU. We have access to all of South America, South and Central America, some of Asia. Not as much as we should, in my opinion. But yeah. Yeah, this stream is gonna be a VOD. I'm gonna leave it up for a couple days. And I'm also going to be dropping a video not related to this at all. It's kind of a Halloween special. I'm still gonna do the video on community that I had planned, on community building that I had planned on doing. Since that poll that I put up on the community post. But before I do that, I'm just dropping this little Halloween special on monsters and the fact that monsters very much exist. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening to my sort of rambly update on the situation, on the context. I hope you learned something, and I just want you all to stay safe. For trainees in the audience, stay safe. I was actually planning something that I'm not really sure it's the safest to do at this point in time, but I will, if I do end up doing it, I'll post it on my community tab and you'll see if that ends up happening. Yeah, all power to all the people. Peace.